Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to another episode of Living Well with Kathleen Saunders, your weekly podcast where we discuss the financial, physical, spiritual, and social well-being of everyday people like you and me. The information shared in this show is for general information purposes only and should not be used to make any personal changes to your lifestyle or health without consulting the appropriate financial, medical, or healthcare professionals. My guest today is Arlene Gurez. Arlene is a registered clinical counselor with over 30 years of working with children and families. She specializes in couples and family counseling, addictions, racial issues, and parenting challenges. Arlene also presents the following workshops: Freedom Through Forgiveness, The Joy of Loving Relationships, and Living a Life You Love. She is available to work both online and in person. For more information about these workshops or counseling sessions with Arlene, go to www.arlenegurez.com or on Facebook at Awakening the Spirit Within. All right. Well, welcome, Arlene, and thank you for being my guest today.
Hi, Kathleen. It's great to be here.
Welcome back. This time we're talking on the topic of depression and how that affects so many people. And in this time of the pandemic, we're seeing so many people who are going through some form of depression right now. So, you know, I'm going to go straight into it, jump straight into our conversation today. Can you please tell us or share with us what causes a person to become depressed?
Well, Kathleen, there are many reasons. One of those reasons might be a family background in which one or both parents suffered from some form of mental illness. And particularly if that parent suffered from depression, then first of all, that child would not have received the emotional, their emotional needs would not have been met in a family like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be partially that their needs were not met, and partially that there will be some learned behavior around depression. The other possibility is sometimes it can be a combination of factors, but certainly a person's physiology and their physical well-being, their health, and then again it can be situational, in which there's been some sort of a trauma or a crisis that may have triggered an old trauma, mm-hmm. and the individual suffers some sort of grief response that just endures for a length of time that then would become what we would call a depression.
Wow.
Now, I have personal experience with depression, and I would have fit that last category. I don't remember ever being depressed as a child. I don't remember either one of my parents being depressed, but I grew up in an alcoholic home, and there was certainly lots of upset and lots of trauma in my home.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a young bride, I got married at 18 years old and then had two children pretty much right away. So I was very young, but still depression was not an issue for me. But when my children became teens and started to experiment with drugs and alcohol, I had no tools, really, no equipment to deal with that feeling that I was back trapped in that my early childhood trauma of being in an alcoholic home. I thought I had escaped it, and here it was showing itself, or I thought that it was showing itself in my children.
So I
launched into quite a deep depression, and it was so debilitating that I couldn't even work for 2 years.
Wow.
As you know, of course, during that time, my children were continuing to do what a lot of teenagers do today.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I was not equipped to be able to be steady and to be a strong anchor for them when they really needed that. So it was a really, really tough time. So for me, it was situational, and it was triggering that old trauma that had not been resolved.
Oh, wow.
For me.
So what did you do? How did you seek help?
Well, I mean, it was bad enough that I had to get help. I was literally suicidal. Oh, I couldn't see an end to the situation. I felt very trapped. Mm-hmm. The marriage really started to suffer. I felt like I was all alone, and no one was, you know, I felt like I had been the one that, you know, and people looked to me, that my family looked to me, other people looked to me. I'm seen, I think people perceive me as being a strong person. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I was in this situation where I needed help. And it felt to me that there was no one there to help me. Mm. You know, I think there were, certainly my mother was very concerned for me, but didn't really understand what was going on and was distressed to see me in distress.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I went for outside help. I went and got some very, very good counseling. I got involved in Al-Anon and got some support there. And it was a very, very, you know, like I said, it was a 2-year process. I was teaching school at the time, and I really, you know, I was more off work than I was on work. Mm. Because I just could not, I was not strong enough emotionally to be able to give the children in the classroom what they need. Teaching is a huge demanding job, and I just wasn't strong enough to be able to do it.
So I have a question. I just wanted to interject there. So people looked at you as being a strong person, but with this depression, you couldn't handle it. You weren't strong enough. That's just kind of the opposite, right?
Well, yeah. And you know, I think that's often the case, mm-hmm. is that we're able to look really good on the outside.
Mm, yes.
And, you know, I'd pulled it off for a number of years, but it was just so bad. It was true clinical depression. I could not pull myself out of it. It was, you know, I would think to myself, you know, I'm a smart person. I'm an educated person.
Yes.
I should be able to get out of bed in the morning, mm-hmm. and go to work. And I simply could not,
wow.
do it. Or if I got as far as the car and started driving, I would break out in tears at the thought of having to be in a classroom with, you know, at that time I was teaching grade 2, and you know, these kids need a lot. You know, you have to be able to give 100% when you're in the classroom with a bunch of young,
right.
children. So I just was not, I was unable to do it.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
You know, I was just going to say, so you were a teacher. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you is, how can a workplace help? Did your place of work help you? Did they even know? Did you share that with them?
Well, yes, because it was so bad that I had to, mm-hmm. go to the doctor and ask for the doctor to fill out a form that said I was unable to work.
Okay.
Now, the school district that I worked in was certainly very, very supportive. And by that time, I had managed to, I never took days off. I was never sick. I'm just a strong person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had lots and lots of sick days, and I was able to take as much time as I needed. I felt that the workplace, I don't recall, I mean, this was 30 years ago, but I don't recall ever actually talking to somebody about it. It was just kind of fill in the forms, send them in, and then I continued to collect full pay. So, yeah, I've often thought about how fortunate I was,
yes.
to be able,
mm-hmm.
to do that. And I think that's the biggest thing, mm-hmm. that a workplace can do is to be able to give. And, you know, not every workplace is large enough or has the finances to be able to support someone financially to take that kind of time. But I was very fortunate that
that's
way.
That's awesome that you had that from your workplace. That's great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it was huge.
That's awesome. Yeah, it is indeed. You know, you mentioned earlier on about having thoughts of committing suicide. I wanted to ask you, what is the percentage of people who consider suicide or have suicidal thoughts?
Well, in Canada, mm-hmm. So right now, the effects of COVID is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, 6% of the general population struggles with suicidal thoughts.
Wow.
While 15% of those with a disability, 14% of those with low incomes, mm-hmm. and 16% of Indigenous people experience this.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, the point being that during COVID, you know, we hear, you know, even see signs around that say we're all in this together. And I completely disagree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, the impacts are very, very different depending on a person's situation, on their employment level. People have lost jobs. People are losing homes. And, of course, those people are going to be much more desperate.
Yeah,
and feel naturally feeling a whole lot more depressed and anxious about their situation.
That's true. That's so true. Mm-hmm. How would you say, how do we remove the stigma then around mental health?
Well, I think that I like to say, now I'm in the business, I'm a counselor and I work with clients that struggle with addiction and anxiety. I think I said addiction. I do work with clients who struggle with addiction, mm-hmm. but also with anxiety and depression. And I like to say, if you shake any family tree, you're going to have one of those three, if maybe not all three, fall out of the family tree. Mm-hmm. So it's partly just acknowledging that this is a reality, mm-hmm. in our society, in our culture, probably in all cultures, mm-hmm. although some cultures more so than others. But my belief is that in Western cultures, it's much more of an issue. And I can go into that later if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I think that's the first thing, is just to accept and recognize, so that we're not trying to brush it under the rug or pretend that it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to talk about my own family with my father, you know, we knew in our own family that my father was an alcoholic, but it was not something that we talked about outside of our own family, and certainly not with any of the other relatives, not with my grandparents, not with the neighbors. And I'm sure that my children were not at the time talking, other than probably telling their friends that they were hanging out with, that their mother was crazy. They wouldn't have said, and that's probably how they would have referred to it. They wouldn't have said, my mother's struggle is really struggling with depression right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we tend to push away what we're not comfortable with.
Yeah, true.
And so rather than having some compassion and understanding for someone who struggles with any kind of mental illness, we tend to do those kinds of things. Well, my mother is crazy, or that next door neighbor is crazy, or, you know, we say it in kind of a degrading fashion, without often acknowledging that perhaps we might struggle with some of these issues ourselves.
And that depression, it's an illness.
Well, yes, absolutely.
Right.
And as I've explained in my own story, I did not want to feel that way,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't stop it.
Right. Tell me, do you know, is there any one gender that's more common, more susceptible to being depressed over another?
Well, women certainly, you know, statistics can be very deceiving, mm-hmm. because women will report more higher incidences of depression. So we think that women struggle with depression more than men, but I don't know that that would be true. And the thing about depression is that a person may not even recognize depression. They might be very, very angry.
Mm.
So it's coming out as anger, where really it's depression.
Right,
but
right.
Anger is much more acceptable, or some people think that it is. It's much more acceptable for a man to go into some sort of a rage than it is for him to sit down and have a good cry.
Mm, yes. Again, it's that strong, you know, people look at you as being strong. So to be considered depressed, or to even cry about it, then I guess the stigma again, or the stereotype, is that they're looked upon as being weak, and men don't want to feel that vulnerable.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
And women, again, are much more likely to seek help for something like depression than men are to seek help for their anger, or if they are recognizing that they're depressed, I have a friend that was talking with today, and her her 14-year-old son is really struggling with depression and anxiety, and she's really wanting him to get help, and he just does not want to get help because it's not manly.
Right, right, right. So, you know, speaking on that, how does someone with depression get treated? What sort of help is there out there for them?
Well, of course, there's always going and being a professional. Yeah. And, you know, when I work with a client, I have a whole series of programs that I set up with them, and we kind of discuss what they're comfortable with. One of the cases that I like to make with people that I believe is very important is that you can take an antidepressant, but it is not going to cure the problem. Okay. Because depression is as a result of something not being right. So it may be that there is that past trauma that needs to be healed. And the depression is simply, I like to think of it like the engine light on your car. You've got this engine light blinking. And, you know, we have ways of turning those lights off, but the car is still going to break down at some point mm-hmm. if we don't get the engine fixed. So it's the same kind of a thing. If I just take an antidepressant, then whatever is depressing me, whatever my upset is about, is not being dealt with. So if it's a past trauma, then we need to take, and certainly that was my case of looking at particularly my relationship with my dad and all of the sadness. He died actually before I had this depressive episode.
Oh, wow.
So I never had a chance to really heal that relationship while he was alive. But I did need to get some help to heal that relationship and to find forgiveness for my dad.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna ask.
Well, that was a huge part of it. And, you know, and I've had that healing, and I can tell you today I have nothing but, I mean, wonderful, wonderful memories and love for my father.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's a big, big part of it. Mm-hmm. And so the past trauma, and then the physiology, we want to make sure that there's not some sort of a physical problem. And part of that is, what is my diet, and what is, you know, how am I making sure to get some form of exercise every day? You know, so there, you know, and there could even be something as serious as some sort of an issue with our brain. So we want to make sure that we have a full physical checkup with the doctor and make sure that area of our lives is being addressed.
Addressed also. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Exercise has a huge impact on your mental health too, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Exercise is extremely important. And one of the things that happened for me when I was going through this depressive episode is I had found a wonderful woman, a coach, who would check in with me every day. And she would ask me to phone her when I woke up, and she would say, "How are you doing?" And I'd go, "Oh, I'm really, really, really depressed." And she would say, "Well, get your shoes on, go for a walk around the block, and phone me when you get back, because I don't want to talk to you until you've had a little bit of exercise." Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and pretty soon I was walking longer and longer, and eventually I was running marathons.
Nice.
So that's how important exercise became to me in the game. That was 30 years ago, and it's still a very, very important part of my life.
Oh, wonderful. That is awesome. That is good to hear. Yeah. Do you know how common depression is in children?
Now, I don't have that information right in front of me right now, so I don't want to hazard a guess. Mm-hmm. But children would show depression very differently than adults. And having worked in the schools for a number of years, what we often see as misbehavior or poor behavior could in fact be depression or anxiety. So even things like temper tantrums clearly something is not working for this child. You know, we would get children that looked sad and their head would be down, they'd be hanging, just not wanting to meet your eyes and so on. And so that was a very clear case indication of depression. But looking back on it, I think that it was more prevalent in the children that were acting out.
I see. I don't know if I should be sharing about your blog, but you've given it to me to read. But your blog here talks about the next steps that you talk about, the 16 points or the 18 points that you've got here. Can you touch on a few, just put out a few key ones here that you could share with us? Because I thought they were quite interesting. Number one was, to me, very powerful, hope and faith.
Yes. And so I have no problem with you mentioning the blog. I haven't published it yet, and it probably won't be ready for a couple of weeks just because I want to put some more time and thought into it.
Okay.
But anyone who wants to take a look at my, do you share later on my webpage?
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
Yes. So yeah. You can find me at arlenegarris.com. But so that was a huge part of what happened for me in that 2 years, as I was reaching out and trying to find some answers for my depression.
Mm.
And I had had a childhood faith, and I came back to that. Thankfully, there was a woman that took me to her church, and I got very connected there, met some wonderful people, met with a lay minister, and she saw me every week, and we did prayer counseling. In which she really did a marvelous job of taking me back to some of my early childhood memories, where my father was drunk and beating up my mother, and I was a child watching this and wanting, feeling so guilty and bad that I couldn't stop my dad, I couldn't help my mother, and even as I say that as an adult, it makes me sad. Mm. But, through prayer, it was really so amazing how I was able to have Christ come alongside my mother and put his arms around her. And it changed memory.
Mm-hmm.
So that instead of seeing her as being all alone and crying and so on, that she was being held and taken care of. Mm-hmm. And so was I during that time. And so was my dad,
mm-hmm.
who, had lots of his own childhood trauma that had never been healed. So that was a huge part for me to really go deep in my faith. Now, I believe that all faiths lead to the same place. That's just my belief. I would just highly advocate for anyone to find whatever their understanding of their God or their higher power might be, and to go deep in that and to ask in prayer, mm-hmm. for the depression to be lifted. Now, in my case, although I was praying every day for the depression to be lifted, it took 2 years, but it was lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never, ever gone back into that. I've had sad moments.
Yes.
16 years ago, my eldest son died.
Oh, wow.
And I went through a deep, dark period of grief, but I couldn't say that it was that to that level of depression.
Oh, sorry to hear that, Arlene. I didn't know that. I just wanted to ask you a quick question there on prayer. I guess we can assume, or without a doubt say, that prayer was healing to both you. You talked about you seen Jesus wrap his arm around your mother and, be there for you and your father. I guess that prayer is comforting. It's also healing, when we pray out loud, when we actually speak the words, or even if we say them within our hearts. But that whole connection with God and just pouring out our heart and sharing, I get that in itself is healing, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm going to just tie number two onto number one, because it's all about connection. So one of our greatest needs as human beings is to be part of a tribe, to be really well connected to other human beings. And of course, that's, in my mind, that's been the very hardest thing about the pandemic, is that I think everyone has lost some form of connection.
Yes.
I know for my husband and I, we're semi-retired. I have my counseling business, and we have a little clothing business that we also have. But the human contact that comes from that is not what it once was. And for many people, they're working from home if they are able to still work. And so, it's great to be able to do what you and I are doing right now, or to be on Zoom calls, or whatever, but we still don't get the same level of connection that we have in normal times. Now, the importance of connection is so important that there's a study, and I don't have the actual year from this, but I can find it later and send it to you if you like.
Yeah.
But in Romania, there were babies in the orphanages, and the Romanian government actually believed that they wanted the children to not be held. They wanted them. They had some sort of belief that they would be better citizens if they weren't actually connected to another human being. So they weren't to be picked up. They weren't to be held. They weren't to be rocked. And they were fed, and their diapers were changed. Mm. And then one by one, those babies started dying.
Wow.
Because they were not getting the human contact.
Right,
so
yes.
That's how important it is. Mm-hmm. It is truly every bit as important as food and shelter. And in this particular case, it was more important. Mm-hmm. So we have to remember that as we are kind of living these semi-isolated lives in our own homes, and make sure that we're very deliberate in finding ways to maintain our human connection.
Yeah, indeed. You know, you talk about connection right away, you know, in this COVID state that we're in, it makes me think straight to seniors and how they must be feeling during this time. They're disconnected. And I guess, you know, depression may also set in with them also too, right?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And my parents have both passed away, and so have my husband's parents. But I do know from friends who have parents in seniors' homes, it's very, very difficult. Now, I mean, they've opened it up somewhat so that they're able to see them outside with some sort of a barrier between them. But for the first couple of months when we were all on strict lockdown, those seniors really, really suffered.
Yes.
And I wouldn't be surprised if some of them died an earlier death just from a broken heart.
Yeah, but, so true.
You know, so it is a side effect of the COVID, and certainly has been a huge factor. I believe that is why the rates of depression have risen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something that we really, at least for ourselves and those that we care about, we need to really pay attention to that one. So the way that ties back to number one is that if we're not able to have the same level of connection with another human being, then that's where God becomes ever that more important.
True. Yes.
And one of my favorite suggestions I read, I can't remember if it was on somebody's blog or in a book, but was somebody talking about their elderly mother who had reached the stage where she really wasn't able to get up out of her chair at all, but she would sit by the window and she would pray for each person that walked by.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, there are many ways to connect, and you know, it's really up to us to become a little bit more creative.
True. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think this pandemic has taught us how to become more creative, I would say. There's so many different ways of people connecting with one another. For example, Zoom has become the most popular one. Going to visit the seniors, looking through the mirror, through the glass, you know, that's another one. And it's just amazing how we have become so resourceful too, in the way that, you know, you're even having prayer meetings online now, and the actual service online. People never thought about that before. And how many people are you actually reaching now? So much more people have been reached through this online form of worship and service and different services that are going on now. So I think it's the pandemic came to do harm, but God has turned it out for good in some ways.
And, you know, we do have that promise in the Bible, and I absolutely believe in it. So I don't know that I wrote this in my blog, but since we're kind of heading in that direction, that's a whole other area in which that is really, really valuable. And something that I clung to when I was fighting this deep depression was that whole thing that somebody else may have meant this for harm, but God means everything good, and all things work for good for those who love God,
Amen.
For those who are called according to his purpose. Yes. And I would really cling to those verses, because then what I started to see is that there was a purpose in my own suffering. There was a reason that I was going through this. And one of the reasons certainly was to heal the pain of my childhood. And the other reason was then for me to become a voice that could hopefully help another person who might be going through it. And that has driven me ever since that time. I've been very much committed to, I went back to school and I already had a master's degree in education, but I went and got another master's degree in counseling so that I would be in a position to be able to do what I thought was the best way to be able to help another person who might be suffering.
Well, that's awesome. Very good for you. On the topic of depression, tell me, what are some of the effects of chronic depression when it's really serious?
Well, the effects really are beyond what that particular person is going through. So, for example, if you have chronic depression and it's a deep depression, you're not going to be able to work. And if you are able to work, you're not going to be as effective as you would be if you weren't depressed, because the depression is like carrying a weighted blanket on your shoulders all day long. Yes. And you cannot get this weight off of your shoulders. It's like you're wearing dark sunglasses and everything just looks dark and cloudy. So the ability to really, you know, like I said, in my situation, I knew that I was not going to be able to give those young children what they needed. And so it's like we're always trying to work with one hand tied behind our back. We're truly handicapped by this situation. So that we're, of course, very badly affected. And then pretty much every single person that we come into contact is going to be affected. So in the workplace is going to suffer, that it's going to have an economic impact on the workplace.
True.
They have an economic impact on us,
right.
on our families. You know, if we have a family, then our family is going to feel that weight of depression, even if they aren't themselves depressed. And certainly our community, because, you know, I believe that every one of us has a gift, and we're meant to share that in the community, in our family, in the community, and in the world. And we can't do that if we're struggling with our own selves.
That's so true. That is really true.
So as a society, we really have a responsibility to support each other and to help, you know. I might be up one day and you're down, and so I give you a hand up, and then the next day it might be that you're up and I'm down. So, you know, whether we're talking about physical health or mental health, we're all brothers and sisters. We are in that way. We are in this together.
Exactly. So true. So true. I have one more question for you. Are there any natural treatments that you know of to help a person with depression?
Well, one of the, you know, certainly things like taking vitamin B can make a difference. You know, I talked a little bit about antidepressants that if a person is suicidal, certainly we want to get on some sort of medication rather than commit suicide, to recognize that it's not a cure. And if we can get ourselves stable, it might take a year or so, or 2 years in my case. Then we can work at getting off of the antidepressants. But you know, many people are able to do it without needing that. So there are natural things, like we talked about, exercise and diet, that are very, very important. We want to make sure our diet is healthy. In my case, you know, and everybody's different, but in my case, I try and stay away from sugar and flour. Because when I do that, I just don't feel good. I feel off. I'm just not good. So, but you know, it's a matter of learning our own bodies and what works for us. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, good on you for even realizing that sugar and flour has that impact on you.
Exactly. You know, sleep is extremely important.
Right.
And, you know, in my case, I could have slept all day long, but some people have a hard time, and that's not good. We want to get around 8 hours, and that doesn't mean sleeping more than nine. And it doesn't mean sleeping less than seven. So it's a matter of trying to hit that 8-hour range and for it to be good sleep. you know, and there's all kinds of things that we can do to support good sleep habits, such as not being on any electronic device for at least an hour before bedtime, and not having caffeine past noon, and that kind of thing. You know, sleeping in a darkened room, in a cool room, and so on. So, mm-hmm. you know, and for me, I like to make sure that I pray, and I often will put on a lovely meditation to go to sleep, mm-hmm. because then I end up having a really good, solid, sound sleep. So, you know, the thing about sleep is that we do, children do all their growing while they're sleeping.
Yeah.
And adults also do their emotional recovery. And if there's any kind of an illness, that recovery happens during sleep. So if we have depression because there actually is a physiological problem, then that's going to be helped by getting the good sleep and the diet and the nutritious diet. And if there's an emotional issue, then that also. I don't know about you, Kathleen, but I know there are days that, you know, like 8 o'clock at night, I'm thinking, gee whiz, I just feel miserable here. I better go to bed and save my husband from my bad mood. But, you know, if we're tired, we're not at our best. So it's about paying attention to our body,
yes.
and knowing when to take the rest when we need it.
Yeah, exactly. Very true. Very true. Mm-hmm. You know, I said I had one last question for you, but you know, a thought came to my mind when you were talking about that. You know, you mentioned about a person who's depressed, their thoughts aren't quite clear, they're depressed and they're thinking somewhat negative thoughts. They can be things from the past, whether it be trauma and so forth. How do you get to the point to get the person to think positive thoughts though?
Well, there again, where did those, this is, to me, it could be a whole other interview, because when you think about it, when we're little children, I don't think there's anyone that could look at a baby and not just absolutely adore that child,
yes.
and think that child is so beautiful, mm-hmm. and so wonderful.
Yeah.
So if we think about ourselves, there we were, these precious little beings being loved and cuddled and taken care of. And then what happened? Well, we started to crawl, and then we started to walk, and maybe we knocked over mom's favorite piece of china, and now we got our hands slapped, or you know, maybe there was that one time, or maybe more than many times, that we were crying in the crib and no one came. And so we started to take on this belief, first of all, about ourselves, that I'm not good or I'm bad. And we may have been hearing those words from the adults in our lives. And so we take on this idea that there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And so when I work with clients, I start there with them, because that's a big lie. It's not true. We were all created by God, every one of us. Mm-hmm. Every one of us are beautiful in His sight.
Yes.
So how do we start to, first of all, it starts at the intellectual level where, you know, perhaps we put some affirmations around, and my favorite one that I use for myself and with my clients is, I am a beautiful, beloved child of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. Mm-hmm. That's the truth about every one of us. And God, I am the apple of His eye.
True,
I mean,
yes.
that makes me giggle, mm-hmm. right? And so at first, that's just like, yeah, right. You know, that's what I get from most clients. Yeah, okay, you can tell me that, and
you can tell me
to write it on a sticky note and to stick it up somewhere and to say it to myself 10 times a day. But right now, I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you continue to do that and to pray on it,
you will.
It will start. Mm-hmm. It will start to go to your heart.
Mm.
And so that's one piece of it. And the other piece of it is I, as you know, Kathleen, I do a lot of work with clients, and one of my main courses that I do in workshops and so on is on forgiveness. And mm-hmm. forgiveness really has to start with ourselves. So in my case, yes, I needed to forgive my dad. But guess what? I hated myself because I had done and said a lot of those same things to my children mm-hmm. that my dad had done and said to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to forgive myself. And that was not an easy process.
Sure, yes.
It took time and it took effort. It took mm-hmm. prayer. It took working with a therapist. But I got there, you know, and mm-hmm. I believe that anyone can get there.
True.
Because there's no one on the face of this earth that, you know, I always like to think of King David's story, and he had Bathsheba's husband killed for heaven's
yes.
sakes,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, and God mm-hmm. still loved him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that story was in the Bible for
yeah.
a reason.
Yeah.
So, you know, God loves me too, and God forgives me. And so if God can forgive me, I actually had a pastor tell me this once, if God can forgive me, then it's very arrogant of me to not forgive myself.
So true. So true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, yeah, to forgive yourself and also not to forgive others, that, you know, if God can
Absolutely.
Forgive us, we need to also be able to forgive others and even the unlovable, the unreachable, you know, all those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. The Bible has so many lessons, life lessons to be learned from it. And there's so many examples that we can learn from. God is truly awesome.
Absolutely.
Truly, truly
Absolutely.
Awesome. Great. So I'm going to leave it to you now just to share some final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners today in regards to depression, and whether it be your blog or just something in general that you wanted to share with us.
Well, I guess the biggest piece for someone who is suffering from depression, or perhaps has a loved one in their lives who is suffering from depression, is to know that there are answers. And I've just shared a few of mm-hmm. them, but there are many different ones that, you know, maybe I'll just give a quick rundown
sure.
here.
Sure.
Mindfulness is a huge, huge one, in which paying attention to what's in front of me. You know, if I'm anxious about what's going to happen tomorrow, or I'm depressed about what happened yesterday, then I'm not able to really focus and appreciate what's going on today.
Sure.
So, you know, like really, you know, when I'm eating, like praying as I'm eating and thinking how marvelous and wonderful it is that I have this food, you know?
Yes.
And so really trying to be in the moment and not in yesterday and not in tomorrow, but really appreciating today. My life is perfect, even though, yes, I had a son die. And, you know, I have many other issues as well. But, you know, my day today has been absolutely wonderful. And I choose, it's one of the things I choose to put into my morning prayer is, like, God, let this be the best day ever. And it always is.
Mm.
So that's one of them. Having a positive attitude, every cloud has a silver lining. And there's lessons in even the most difficult situations. There are always lessons, which, again, you know, for me comes out of the Joseph story. You know, what happened there is that, you know, gosh, what his brothers threw him in a hole and then sold him.
Mm-hmm.
And he forgave
yes.
them, you know, and his life turned out, because he was a man of faith, his life turned out to be absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, those stories are there to be lessons for us and
True.
To point us towards how our lives can be. Our lives can be every bit as wonderful. So I believe that completely. Self-compassion is just, you know, again, it falls into the area of forgiving myself. Would I ever talk to another person the way that I talk to myself sometimes?
Hmm.
You know, and so being kind in my thoughts and watching my thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, our thoughts are habits. And again, those are habits that were formed in early childhood.
Yes.
When we're little children, our minds are like tape recorders. So we are like little sponges. That's how we learn language. So if there was a lot of negativity in our homes, or sometimes it's just that we misinterpreted the adult behavior or their words, and we assumed certain things about that and took that into our being and started to form our own impression of ourselves. So a lot of that needs to be undone. A lot of that needs to be questioned. So pay attention to those thoughts and just say, hold on here a minute. I'm not going to let you beat Arlene up like that. Be nice. She's a really, she is a beautiful, beloved child of
yes,
God. Let's be nice
is.
To her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Do you want me to go on? How are we doing for time?
We're good for time. If you have two, three more that you want to share, go right ahead.
Sure. Okay. So, let's look at fun. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that by nature I could be a very, very serious person and, you know, just be working all the time and getting things done. But I need to take a break. I need to, you know, I have a little puppy that is just the delight of my life. So I purposely sometimes have to force myself mm-hmm. to stop what I'm doing and just play with the dog or mm-hmm. go for a walk with her, you know, and just have some fun. My husband and I are very fortunate because we both have the same kind of wacky sense of humor. And, you know, we'll put on some music and kind of dance around or just be fools and mm-hmm. not worry about what we might look like. So it's important to give ourselves permission to be childlike mm-hmm. sometimes.
Definitely.
And that's really important. And another area that I didn't really, I just barely mentioned it, is grief work. And, you know, I mentioned that my son had passed away and it was a shock. It was an accident. He was hit by a car. Wow. And that was another 2 years that I really had to take a lot of time off of work. And once again, I was very fortunate in having a great plan that allowed me to do that and a great company that allowed me to do that with full pay.
Awesome.
But I by that time, I had enough of an understanding of my own mental health. And I was in a good space when he died. And I knew, first of all, that I needed to get help. I went for grief counseling. And I did a lot of journaling. I would sit with my Bible for hours and allow myself to cry and write my son letters and tell him how much I loved him and how much I missed him and allow ourselves to grieve. Mm-hmm. And what happens with a lot of our emotions, emotion is a really great word because if we look at it, if we take the E off of the word, then we have E and then we have motion.
Yes.
So the E mm-hmm. stands for energy.
Mm-hmm.
The energy needs to move through our bodies.
Okay.
And what happens if we don't allow that energy to move through our bodies, it stays stuck and it will become either anxiety or depression or both. So we need to allow those feelings to come out. And because our culture in many ways teaches us that it's not okay to cry, it's not okay it's not okay to be silly, it's not, you know, it's just not okay. Just, you know, we have a certain way that it's culturally acceptable to be. And anything outside of that is kind of shunned.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be in a safe place where we're given permission to allow that grief to come up. And if we do that, if we give it the time and space that it needs, we will heal.
Mm. Yeah. I like what you said there. Emotions, mm-hmm. energy moving through our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I'm going to bookmark that and keep that. That's so very true. You also said that, children could be, it's almost like children are allowed to be silly, but when we grow up, we have to act like grown-ups and there's no opportunities for us to just to relax, let loose, have fun, do something goofy. And I think we all need to do that. We can't be uptight all the time. I don't think that's healthy.
Well, that's right. And I don't know about the family you were raised in, but in my family, I don't remember past the age of 3 or 4 years old being allowed to be goofy.
Okay.
Like it was like children were meant to be seen and not heard.
Yes.
And you had to sit at the table and behave in a certain way
mm-hmm.
and make sure you eat all your meals and, you know, don't leave anything on your plate. So, you know, I mean, all these rules and standards, I know that my parents wanted me to grow up to be a mm-hmm. socially acceptable human, you know, adult.
Yeah.
And that's what their goal was. But then we learned that the way that I am is not okay. So, you know, for me, this has been a wonderful adventure, you know, 30-year adventure of uncovering and discovering and recovering the beautiful person that I was always meant to be.
Yes.
And a lot of that is being childlike.
Yeah, yeah. Just enjoying you and appreciating God's goodness. Yeah, awesome. Very good.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Arlene. Thank you so much
again
for, you know, coming on and sharing these awesome information and some great tips here. You know, you talked about choosing. It's up to us to choose to have a good day. And every day I get out of my bed, I do make that choice. Today's going to be a good day. Why? Well, first to begin my thing, for me, every day above ground is a good day. And today is no exception. So, you know, I just want to give God thanks and praise for that. You know, that is my motto that I say. And you have shared some amazing tips here. And I'm going to go back as always and listen to this podcast and just take in what you've said. Depression is a serious thing. It's affecting a lot of people. And hearing some of the information that you shared will help me help them or understand, basically, if I can't necessarily help them, because not everybody wants to be helped. I guess you have to maybe wait to be asked instead of imposing yourself on a person, would you say?
Well, that's true. And that is something to keep in mind, mm-hmm. that there's always a little bit of chaos. And that was a question that when I went for help for the depression, one of the very first questions that the therapist asked me is, what's the payoff? What is the payoff in being depressed? And often the payoff is maybe you can get a little bit of extra attention. Mm. Well, if you're feeling, you know, as I said, my marriage had broken up. And so, you know, any little bit of extra attention where people might feel sorry for me at that time seemed like a good idea. But then working with a therapist, I was, but really, do you want people to feel sorry for you? Mm. Well, no, I don't. You know, I don't want to be this pathetic, sad person that people feel sorry for.
Right.
Okay, so let's take a look at what the payoffs are. And certainly anyone who's listening, if they're at that level and they're thinking, well, gee, you know, I'm not sure that I really want to give this depression up, then I would suggest that a person either working with a therapist or doing some journal work and writing down what all the payoffs are to holding on to the depression, because it is at some level a choice.
True, definitely.
Even though, as I said, I wanted to not be depressed and I felt like I couldn't let go of it, mm-hmm. but I made the choice to get the help and to take the action to heal from it. And it was a long, slow journey, but I did recover from it. So I've had clients that also have recovered. So I know that is something that we can beat.
Great. Thank you mm-hmm. so much. Just love talking with you. Time goes by so quick. Always, always a good conversation with you. And I look forward to the next time that we get together. So again,
absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being my guest today. Have a great rest of your day, Arlene.
My pleasure, Kathleen. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoy the topic and found something that you can apply to your own life. Don't forget to share this episode with your family and friends. And remember, live well daily.